Back in 2002, Australia had 8 operating oil refineries in Kwinana, Geelong, Altona, Clyde, Kurnell, Lytton, Bulwer Island, and Port Stanvaq. Fast forward to today, and only 2 are left, one in Geelong and another in Lytton. Those remaining 2 refineries aren't exactly heavy hitters either. They supply less than 20% of the country's fuel. The rest arrives on foreign ships, processed in foreign refineries through some of the most contested shipping lanes on the planet. The irony here is pretty wild. Australia is one of the largest energy exporters in the world. It ships gas to Japan, coal to India, and uranium to Europe. It even exports a massive 96% of its own crude oil. And then it buys fuel back, refined in Singapore and South Korea from the very oil it sold them. Because of this cycle, Australia is currently sitting on a razor-thin margin. It holds barely 36 days of petrol in reserve, the lowest of any oil-importing nation in the developed world. The sad part is that these refineries didn't shut down because Australia ran out of oil. Because it didn't. They shut down for a reason almost nobody was paying attention to. In 1946, construction began on a refinery in Altona, in Melbourne's western suburbs. 3 years later, it was processing crude oil. In 1955, BP opened Kwinana, south of Perth, which became the largest refinery in the country. By the early 1960s, refineries were operating in every major coastal city: Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne, and Perth. These were commercial facilities as well as strategic infrastructure, built in the shadow of a war that had shown Australia exactly how vulnerable a remote island continent could be without its own fuel supply. And for decades, the system worked. Australian refineries processed a mix of domestic and imported crude, supplied in national market, and employed thousands of workers in industrial suburbs that grew up around them. The towers of Altona became part of Melbourne's western skyline. The pipes of Kurnell stretched along Botany Bay. Refining was invisible to most Australians, and that was the point. You don't think about fuel security when the system is working. But the refineries in Australia built in the 50s and 60s were small. They were designed for a country of 10 or 15 million people, running on domestic crude blends and serving a modest fuel market. That worked fine until the rest of the world started building on a scale Australia hadn't even imagined. Starting in the 1980s, Asia began constructing a new generation of mega refineries. To put it in perspective, the Jamnagar refinery in India could process 1.24 million barrels of oil a day. That's more than Australia's entire national consumption from a single site. South Korea and Singapore followed suit. South Korea's Ulsan complex handled around 840,000 barrels daily. Singapore, a city-state smaller than Greater Sydney, became one of the world's largest refining hubs, with ExxonMobil alone running a 600,000-barrel-per-day operation on Jurong Island. These weren't just bigger plants. They were massive, all-in-one industrial complexes that combined refining with high-tech chemical production. Because they were fully automated, they could run 24/7. This allowed them to process the cheapest crude oil found anywhere on Earth. By the time they exported the finished product, their profit margins were so high that Australian operators simply couldn't compete. And here's where the story takes a turn that most Australians never hear about. Australia actually produces oil. In fact, it produces quite a lot. But 96% of that production gets exported and sent north to the very mega refineries in Singapore, South Korea, and Indonesia that were undercutting Australian plants. If you ask why, it is because Australian crude is light and sweet, a high-quality grade that most massive Asian refineries are willing to pay a premium for. Meanwhile, our own local refineries need heavier crude blends to produce the full range of fuels the domestic market demands. And most of Australia's oil comes from the Northwest Shelf, thousands of kilometres from the East Coast refineries. Believe it or not, it's actually cheaper to ship that oil to Singapore than to send it to Sydney. So, Australia began exporting its own oil to the very competitors that were putting its local plants out of business, only to buy the finished petrol back from them later. When BP announced it was closing Kwinana in October 2020, the workers found out at the same time as everyone else. They read the corporate statement and realised their jobs were gone. And the timing couldn't have been worse. Just a month earlier, the federal government had set aside money to help save Australia's refineries. But the help wasn't ready yet. By the time the paperwork was moving, the gates of the refinery were already closing. 4 months later, ExxonMobil shut down Altona. It was the same pattern. A corporate review followed a conclusion that the site was no longer viable and so it should be converted into an import terminal. In a single year, Australia lost half of its remaining refining capacity. Each closure had its own specific reason, but the underlying pressure was the same. Australian refineries faced higher labour costs, higher energy costs, and stricter environmental compliance than their Asian competitors. Their infrastructure was aging, requiring constant capital just to maintain. Their ports were too shallow to receive the largest crude carriers. The very large crude carriers that delivered 2 million barrels at a time to mega refineries in Asia, slashing transport costs per barrel. Australian refineries paid more just to get the crude to the gate. To top it off, the strong Australian dollar during the mining boom of the 2000s made imported fuel even cheaper. Local refineries weren't just fighting big competitors, they were fighting a global economy that had already moved on. Now compare this with what South Korea did. In the 1970s, South Korea's refining industry was small, but the government identified fuel self-sufficiency as a national priority. And so it invested in massive coastal refinery infrastructure and built complexes like Ulsan, which now processes over 1 million barrels every single day. Singapore made the same bet. They turned a tiny island with zero natural resources into a global refining hub through deliberate state investment in port depth, automation, and scale. Australia took the opposite path. For years, no government, state or federal, Labor or coalition, stepped in to stop the first six refineries from closing. The prevailing logic was that the fuel market is global, supply chains are tough, and propping up struggling refineries would just distort the market. Every time a refinery closed, it was treated as a private business move and not a blow to national security. Then COVID-19 hit in 2020. Global demand for fuel fell off a cliff and profit margins hit rock bottom. For the big multinational companies, this was the final straw. It gave them the perfect financial excuse to shut down the remaining plans they had been reviewing for years. By the time the government finally saw the big picture, it was too late. In 2021, they launched a $2.3 billion subsidy, the Fuel Security Services Payment, to keep the last two refineries standing. The money arrived, but the damage was done. Six of the original eight plants were already gone. Here's the hard truth. You can't just flip a switch and reopen a refinery once it's been turned into an import terminal. That door only swings one way. Fast forward to right now, 2026. The risks we talked about for 30 years are no longer just what-if scenarios. They are happening. The Strait of Hormuz, where a fifth of the world's oil flows, is effectively closed to commercial shipping. Recent strikes on Iranian targets triggered a wave of retaliatory attacks on major oil infrastructure. Because of this, oil prices have spiked past $100 a barrel. In Australia, the impact is hitting home fast. Petrol is pushing towards $3.50 a litre. But for the many, the price isn't even the biggest problem. It's the supply. In regional towns across New South Wales and Western Australia, drivers are pulling into service stations only to find signs on the pumps that read, "Sorry, out of diesel." Farmers are starting to sound the alarm. The National Farmers Federation has warned that if diesel supplies tighten further, food prices could rise by as much as 50% because every piece of fresh produce in an Australian supermarket got there on a truck. And every truck runs on diesel that Australia does not make enough of. In remote indigenous communities, where fuel deliveries already arrive weeks apart, the margins are even thinner. For a truckie running freight between Adelaide and Perth, fuel is the backbone of the business model. And so when diesel prices spike, small operators don't raise prices. They go under. And standing between Australia and complete fuel import dependence are two refineries, Ampol's Lytton plant in Brisbane and Viva Energy's facility in Geelong. Together, they supply less than 20% of national demand. Both are kept alive by the Fuel Security Services Payment, a government subsidy that begins expiring in mid-2027. Both companies retain the contractual right to close earlier. Ampol's CEO has publicly stated that Lytton could shut if margins stay persistently low. The talks about what happens after the subsidy expires are described, diplomatically, as ongoing. If Lytton closes, the entire country would depend on a single refinery in Geelong. One plant, 27 million people. Think back to that number from the start. In 2002, Australia had 8 refineries. Today, it has 2. The country now imports roughly 90% of its refined fuel. Right now, we hold about 36 days of petrol in reserve, a slim margin in a world where the international benchmark is 90. The irony is hard to ignore. We export our own crude oil to the very countries whose refineries replaced our own, only to buy that fuel back at whatever price the market demands. Australia didn't lose its refineries to a war or a natural disaster. We lost them to a long string of reasonable decisions. Each one made sense on its own, but together, they stripped away layers of national resilience. No spreadsheet ever accounted for that loss. Yet tonight, a family in Dubbo is sitting at the kitchen table, trying to decide if they can afford to fill the tank. They're hoping the price drops tomorrow. They're hoping the next tanker arrives on time. Most of all, they're hoping those distant shipping lanes stay open just long enough. In the end, the refineries didn't close because Australia couldn't afford them. They closed because, for a very long time, we convinced ourselves we didn't need them.